Hi, and welcome to the Political Science Podcast, No Problem at All. In this podcast, we want to talk to political scientists about their research in the context of bigger developments in society and politics. We will have one guest per episode, and we base each episode around one or more papers that lie at the core of our guests' research interests. Us, that is the co-host, Julius Kölzer, and myself, Viktor Burgi. Hi, Julius. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Viktor. Welcome to the podcast. We are graduate students of political science based in Kiel and Zurich. And the idea of this podcast is to provide a platform so that insights of political science can reach a broader audience.
Exactly. Today, we talk to Nils Steiner, who is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Mainz in Germany. He mainly works on topics at the intersection of public opinion and voting behavior, party politics, and political economy. Nils has investigated political attitudes and preferences of so-called left authoritarian voters in several articles.
More specifically, Nils worked on the so-called left authoritarian supply gap in West European party systems and the voting behavior of left authoritarian voters. These voters combine authoritarian preferences on the socio-cultural dimension with left-wing preferences on the economic dimension.
Hey Nils, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
In January 2024, the foundation of a new German party received a lot of attention in national and international media. Sarah Wagenknecht, the former parliamentary co-chair of the party The Left, founded her own party called the Alliance Sarah Wagenknecht, in German Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht, BSW. And before she left her old party, Sarah Wagenknecht caused much debate over the issue of immigration inside of The Left. She frequently criticized the leadership for, according to her, focusing too much on sociocultural topics like the environment or gender-related issues. Now she is leader of her own party, which wants to run in the upcoming German state elections and the European election. Even if previous polls on the party's strength are a bit vague, I should say, BSW could emerge successfully from these elections. So, from a political science perspective, what is interesting about this new party, BSW, Nils?
I think there are several things that are interesting, but at least coming from the perspective of my research, what is certainly interesting is that the party has an unusual offer in terms of the policy positions it combines. So it's clearly a party that will be different from Die Linke and that will be more conservative. I mean, it's in the branding by Sarah Wagenknecht herself, clearly visible, that the idea is to have a more conservative profile. And at the same time, it stands to reason that the party will also be relatively left-wing, so in terms of economic issues. So we will see a party that is a bit authoritarian, a bit conservative, but it's still rather left-wing on economic issues, and that's something that is not seen often in party systems in Western Europe, where we historically don't have that many parties that are at the same time left-wing in terms of economic issues, and then when it comes to cultural issues are more conservative or traditional.
That this type of party is rather unusual in European party systems. Does this mean that there is just not that much voter potential for these parties?
No, there is clearly such a voter potential. That is what political scientists have seen for decades, basically. But there also have been some newer analysis which basically show that when it comes to voters, there's clearly a separation between different policy dimensions. So there's one economic dimension where positions are about the redistribution of income and wealth, where there are questions about the generosity of the welfare state, how progressive taxes should be, how much the state should intervene in the economy. And this is clearly one dimension of voter preferences. And then there's a really separate dimension that is about cultural policy preferences, where we summarize basically different issues that can be called cultural or sociocultural. These are questions about immigration, about the rights of historically disadvantaged groups, questions about traditional morality versus cultural liberalism. And now if we look at survey data and try to see whether people who are left-wing on economic issues are also left-wing on cultural issues or libertarian on cultural issues, we don't see any strong correlation there. And that means that there are voters basically in all different parts of the policy space. In each of these quadrants, we basically see voters. So there are voters that are left-wing on economic issues, and at the same time, they demand conservative authoritarian policies on cultural issues.
I was wondering a bit, I mean, Victor already said that at least in Germany, it's a new type of party, BSW. But I was wondering, if you look at other European countries, are there any precedents for that? Have there been any left authoritarian parties in the past, or in what does the situation look like in other European countries?
Yeah, I think there are some predecessors to left authoritarian parties. At least it would be wrong to say that there have never been parties in Western Europe that have been somehow left authoritarian. I mean, there have been National Socialist parties in the past, there have been communist parties in the past. But these parties were really not that successful, at least when it comes to post-World War II Western Europe. And then there were parties that basically moved to the left authoritarian quadrant from their position that were basically in other quadrants. So what we can say for radical right parties is that they basically started most of the time as parties that were, of course, traditionalist and authoritarian on cultural issues, but at the same time they started as parties that were conservative and right-wing on economic issues as well. And some of these parties then moved over time to more left-wing economic positions. So they at least moved towards the left authoritarian quadrant. So there has been some movement of parties towards that quadrant from the radical left, from the radical right. But we can also see this with regard to some radical left parties, which basically moved there from some other positions. So from the left libertarian position, parties moving towards a more authoritarian position. And this is something that is seen, for example, in the Socialist Party in the Netherlands, which at least for some of the election campaigns seems to have had a more conservative positions, basically appealing to these left authoritarian voters.
One other example would be maybe be the Greek Communist Party. I think, and like last week ago, there was this in Greece, we had this decision about the legalization of same-sex marriage. And basically, if I'm correct, the Greek Communist Party voted against the legalization of same-sex marriage. So that's quite a fitting example. One other party that comes to my mind is the Danish Social Democratic Party. What's your take on this? Because at least in Germany, many people always talk about how the Danish Social Democratic Party combines culturally conservative positions with a rather left-wing stance on economic issues.
Yeah, I think, Julius, you know more about Greek politics than I do, so I won't comment on that much. Other than that, we did research on radical left parties and class voting for radical left parties, where we wanted to see how the positions of radical left parties influences the class composition of their electorates. And what we could see there is that, yes, the Greek communists, they are the most authoritarian of these radical left parties in Europe. And we also see that their electorate is composed more of production workers than the electorates of other radical left parties and more lower educated voters. So they have a different class profile, which seems to result from the position they take. With regard to the Social Democrats in Denmark, I mean, yeah, I think there's variation between Social Democratic parties in how exactly they are positioned on the cultural dimension. And there are parties that are more clearly libertarian than others. But I wouldn't think of the Social Democrats in Denmark to be staunchly authoritarian or nationalist or conservative. It's true from what I know that the party has a relatively strict stance and promotes regressive policies when it comes to migration and the integration of migrants. This is certainly true. And in this sense, the party also kind of appeals to this left authoritarian segment without being truly conservative and authoritarian on the cultural dimension, if we look at all the policy issues that are relevant to this dimension.
But in the bigger picture, it still seems like, even though there is this potential on the side of the electorate, that there are only very few cases of successful left authoritarian parties in European countries. Why don't we have more cases of successful radical left authoritarian parties?
I mean, it's a difficult question in a way, because it could still happen. I mean, when it comes to the alliance Sarah Wagenknecht, we do not know yet how the party will perform. I mean, we have just some first polling results, and we do not really know how the party will perform in the European Parliament elections, and then also in the state elections, and then in the next German national elections. So it could just be the case that this could be successful, and that it could also be successful in other countries. I think in principle, it seems possible for parties to do that. So at least that's how I think about it. I don't see any reason why it would be impossible for a party to say, we are in favor of redistribution, we are in favor of a strong welfare state, we want higher taxes for the rich, but at the same time, we want to limit immigration. We are a bit traditional when it comes to traditional morality questions. We don't want too many rights for historically disadvantaged groups. I mean, I think in principle, parties could do that. I think one difficulty here is why it might be difficult to establish that is that it's difficult from the perspective of a certain left-wing ideology, which thinks that which basically thinks that left-wing means to be in favor of the rights of disadvantaged groups. And if you think about it from this perspective, left-wing would mean that you are in favor of redistribution towards the poor, but you also want to do things that are good to other groups that have not been doing well historically, like, for example, women who have been disadvantaged or ethnic minorities. So from the perspective of people who have this full-scale left-wing ideology, it seems difficult to combine issues in this way. And I think people who think about these questions very ideological, for them it might not be attractive to have that package, because it's not, from this ideological perspective, it doesn't really make sense. But for voters who aren't that strongly ideological, it could be attractive. But it could be hard to find educated elites who think it's a good idea to combine issues in this way.
I think you already touched a bit on this subject, and we also talked a bit about left authoritarian voters and who they actually are. And as you said, left authoritarian voters find themselves in a supply gap in most European party systems. So there are parties that align with the positions of these voters on the economic dimension, such as radical left parties, for example. And there are also parties on the cultural dimension that correspond, for example, to the anti-immigration position of these voters. And basically, I wonder how left authoritarian voters navigate in this complex cross-pressuring situations and how we can understand their voting decisions in this regard.
So if we think about this from the perspective of this left authoritarian supply gap, so the idea there are left authoritarian voters, but there are no left authoritarian parties, then it's a question about which of the policy dimensions are more important to them. So they have to give up basically on congruence on one dimension. They can only pick a party that is either corresponding to their economic position or it's corresponding to their cultural position. And then it's a matter of salience. So what is more important to these voters? And if it's the economy or economic issues, redistribution issues that are more important to these voters, we should see that they vote for left-wing parties, left libertarian parties. But if it's cultural issues, immigration specifically most of the time, that is more important to these voters, we should see that they tend to vote for right authoritarian parties. So in this case, then they would privilege congruence on cultural issues. And there's very nice work, I think, which shows that, a nice article from Zoe Lefkofridi, Markus Wagner and Johanna Willmann, where they looked at this question and they basically find exactly that. So when people care more about cultural issues, they vote for right authoritarian parties. And when left authoritarian voters care more about these economic issues, they vote for left libertarian parties.
But you also done some research on Germany specifically in regard to this question. You find similar evidence, am I right?
Yes, I did some work on that together with my colleague Sven Hillen, where we looked at the German case and we also looked at what left authoritarians said are the most important issues to them. So we took the question where basically people were asked, what do you think is the most important political issue now in Germany? And people just gave an open answer to that. And from that, we coded whether they gave an answer that had anything to do with an economic issue, an economic problem, or whether they gave an answer that had something to do with immigration and migrant integration. And what we found was that when left authoritarians name something that is related to economic issues, they are more likely to vote for Die Linke and also for the Social Democrats. But if they name something that is related to this complex of immigration, they tend to vote for the AfD.
What you find in one of your papers on the topic is that misperceived congruence also plays a role, so that voters don't have a clear idea of what the party stances actually are, or which policies the party they vote for actually favor. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes, it's true that my previous answer was a bit superficial in a way, because we also looked at this issue, how the voters, the left authoritarian voters, perceive the parties. And there could be a different pathway, basically, leading left authoritarian voters to vote for a right authoritarian party or a left libertarian party, namely when these voters misperceive party positions. And we were specifically interested in voting for the AfD, but also for Die Linke. And the idea there would be that there are some voters out there, some left authoritarian voters, that actually think that the AfD is economically rather left-wing, that it's in favor of redistribution, that it wants higher taxes for the rich. And when this is the case, when left authoritarians think that the AfD is rather left-wing on economic issues, they are also more likely to vote for the party. And the same with regard to voting for Die Linke. Then when left authoritarians think that the party is basically tough on immigration and wants to restrict immigration, they become more likely to want to vote for the party. So it's not only about this salience, but it also matters what voters think are the actual party positions.
Moving away from the position of these voters in the two-dimensional policy space, more towards sociodemographic factors, I was wondering about which kind of voters are we actually talking in terms of class, education? What are your findings there?
Yeah, there's a very clear pattern, I would say. It's voters with lower incomes and lower levels of formal education. And it's basically the combination of both that is important. Because if we think about the two dimensions, it's the case that income basically distinguishes people who are left-wing on the economic dimension from those who are right-wing on the economic dimension. And education basically structures voters' position on the cultural dimension. So we see people with low education who are authoritarian, and we see people with low incomes who are basically economically left-wing. And people who are both have both low incomes and low levels of formal education, these tend to be left authoritarian. And you can also then put this in terms of social classes, where you would find that it's especially production workers and then to a smaller extent also service workers, which tend to be left authoritarian. And the same is true if you not look at people's occupations to classify them in terms of social classes, but if you just ask them for their class identification, and then you find that those who identify as lower class tend to have left authoritarian positions. And for the German case in particular, I mean, it's something that it's really German specific in a way, but there we could show that it's people who have been socialized in the former German Democratic Republic, which tend to be left authoritarian. So it's really not living in the eastern part of Germany only, but it's really having been raised when the GDR still existed in the eastern part of Germany. These people tend to be more left authoritarian as well in the German case.
The idea of these left-wing authoritarian attitudes being more prevalent in the working class, this idea is quite old in political science, I should yes. say. Martin Lipset wrote about that in the 1950s already.
Yes.
Can we actually like still look back on that old paper, if you will, and say like this is still very much important for political science today, what Lipset wrote in 59, I think?
Yeah, I think in terms of this general idea that some workers tend to be authoritarian, I think that is still true. I mean, what is certainly different are the political issues that are contested and that are discussed in politics. I think it's not that it's the same issues we just still discuss today as has been the case in the 1950s. But this like general idea, workers tend to be relatively more authoritarian than other groups, this is still true.
Moving on, or maybe we can come back to the specific example of BSW. I think another question we should certainly talk about is to what extent the label left authoritarian actually fits both the party's position and its electorate. And I mean, the only paper so far that we have on this is from Sarah Wagner et al., who actually find that while the voter potential for the BSW is certainly culturally conservative, on the economic axis, they find that the voter potential is rather centrist or even more right-wing, which is kind of surprising. And I mean, also when we look at party positions, Wagenknecht, for example, talked about how great the German Mittelstand is, so small and medium-sized enterprises, and the government should do more in supporting them. And also Wagenknecht talked about how important it is to value individual efforts of the hardworking people in Germany. And I was wondering, is actually left authoritarianism a fitting label for both the electorate and also for the party's positions?
I think I start with the party because it's even more moving target with regard to the voters. So it makes sense to start with the party, I guess. There have been attempts to look at the documents from the parties, and I have seen work by Mark Debus, I believe, Christian Stecker and Jochen Müller, where they basically did an automated content analysis to look at the position of the BSW. And what they find with regard to the economic positioning of the party is that the party is as left-wing as the Greens and the Social Democrats. And I'm a quant guy, so I do statistical work, so I'm basically fine with what they do in terms of quantifying that there. Of course, I've also looked at the speeches from people inside the party, and it's clear that there have been, in a way, mixed messages. And we could also talk about this concept of blurring. So the idea that sometimes parties do not want to take very clear positions on dimensions because they want to appeal to people who are positioned on different poles of these dimensions. And this has been articulated with regard to the radical right, where the idea has been exactly that they avoid taking clear positions on the economic dimensions, on the economic dimension. I don't know whether we might expect something similar from the BSW, that it kind of wants to avoid taking a very clear left-wing position on economic issues. I think overall, from what I have seen, I would think the party is still more left-wing economically than it is right-wing. And it's very clear, I think, if we talk about higher taxes for the super rich. But then again, you are right that there have been mixed messages, and I think we just need to see. In terms of the electorate, it will depend on what the party will do in terms of its positioning. And it's very hard to tell because we do not know how the party will position itself moving forward. And this will, of course, have repercussions for the composition of the electorate. I know the paper by Sarah Wagner and colleagues, and it's a great work. It's a great idea. But I think one issue that might be that when it comes to the question of whether the voters would be also left-wing of a Wagenknecht party is that what they do is they basically compare, if I'm right, how voters rate Die Linke and how they rate Sarah Wagenknecht. So this approach is very good to see whether potential Wagenknecht party voters are more authoritarian than left party voters. But we wouldn't expect that Wagenknecht party voters are more economically left-wing than voters of Die Linke. So this approach doesn't really tell us whether overall, if we would look at voters overall, whether voters of a Wagenknecht party would be more left-wing compared to the electorate as a whole, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick comment. I mean, there are like so many takes on the electorate and so much stuff in the media, so many comments on it, but actually we have still little information and not good survey data on voters of the BSW yet. Just some analysis and also the surveys, we never really know what questions were asked when it comes to the voter potential of the BSW. So that, as you say, still many open questions.
I guess still, if we think about the voter potential and also look at the polls, which are, as you said, Julius, a bit questionable at times, but it seems if there is a pattern that the party could perform more strongly in the East than in the West. And also Wagenknecht, of course, she grew up, she was politicized in the former GDR. She entered the SED, I believe, in the last days, basically, of the existence of the GDR. So how do you think the potential success of BSW in the East could relate to Wagenknecht as a figure that many people know in German politics?
Yeah, I mean, I think the party is really unthinkable without Sarah Wagenknecht. I mean, it's in the name, and it's very clear that the appeal of the party is basically tied to her as a person, and also as a person, as a politician who had made clear before that that she has different positions than Die Linke, and that she's more restrictive when it comes to questions of migration, and that she's also more culturally conservative when it comes to other questions. So it's basically a connection between her as a personality and her as a person who I think is also rhetorically gifted in a way. And then holding certain positions which are attractive for parts of the electorate. And I mean, coming from this perspective of left authoritarian positions, it kind of makes sense that Sarah Wagenknecht is left authoritarian, having been socialized in the GDR. It's exactly the finding I mentioned. And it also might explain why the appeal of the party might be stronger in the eastern part of Germany, and especially among older cohorts, among people who have been socialized in the GDR. And that is what I would expect to see. I haven't seen the data yet, but it's what I would expect to see, that the party would be strongest in older cohorts in the German East.
I think one other factor that might come into play here is the role of populism. I mean, if you look at Wagenknecht's speeches, I would say there's a high degree of populism in what she says, yeah, and how she articulates herself. It's not really combined with a Sick ideology, like in the AfD, but super anti-establishment. I was wondering if the higher support in the former GDR might also rise from the fact there's a higher sentiments of populism and anti-establishment attitudes there compared to the rest of Germany.
Yes, you are right. We see that populist attitudes are more widespread in the eastern part of Germany. And this has also been one explanation why the AfD is more successful in eastern Germany. It's also the case that nativist attitudes are more widespread in eastern Germany, but it's also this populist sentiment, which explains why the AfD is more successful in eastern Germany. And yes, that would be expected for the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht as well. And I would agree with you that the party is also very much populist in its messaging so far. And there's a legitimate debate on whether it's really this cultural conservatism and authoritarianism and nativism that matters, or whether it's more this kind of anti-establishment populism. So we talked about this from the perspective of a two-dimensional model, which basically sees political competition as structured by this economic and this cultural dimension. But there are other conceptions. I mean, there's this idea of a two-dimensional model where you basically have a left-right ideological dimension, and then you just have an anti-establishment dimension. And seen from this perspective, the appeal of the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht would be tied to having a very much populist anti-establishment platform. But it's really hard, I think, to separate this out in the end, because we also see that populism and populist attitudes among voters also correlate with having more conservative, more culturally authoritarian positions. So it's hard to say what is exactly doing the work here. Is it this populism, or are these specific positions on cultural issues doing the work?
But if we take these aspects together, so higher levels of populism / nativism and the salience of the second dimension, the authoritarian preferences there, you would expect BSW to compete with the AfD over voters. Do I understand you correctly there?
Yes. I think that's what I would expect. And it seems clear from this perspective of the left authoritarian supply gap, where we would believe, and we know that there are these people out there who hold left-wing economic positions and authoritarian positions on the cultural dimension. And some of these voters or these people have been voting for the AfD, but it could be the case that they are attracted to a party which is also conservative on cultural issues, maybe less conservative than the AfD, and also less tough on immigration, but also more restrictive on immigration than other parties of the traditional left. Such a package could be attractive to parts of the AfD voters who are rather left-wing on economic issues. So I think the party can really take away voters from the AfD. Also voters who are populists, who are anti-establishment, but who still have some reservations when it comes to voting for a party that is perceived by them as being too far right, being too extremist. And I think for these parts of the AfD voter segment, the BSW could be a nice and attractive alternative.
Yeah, I mean, in the East German state elections that are coming up now, BSW could sort of play a kingmaker role in the coalition negotiations, because it's certainly going to get some sizable share of the vote, and yeah, it just comes super important in coalition building there, but that's a whole other topic. Yes. I think one other thing that is important, talking about Wagenknecht and this new party, is the role of Russia and Ukraine. I would say that foreign policy, Germany's position on the war in Ukraine is salient right now, or was maybe more salient some months ago, but it's still an important topic in the German public. And Wagenknecht herself has really positioned her against the position of the German government on Ukraine. And I was wondering, how important is actually Wagenknecht's position on foreign policy and Ukraine and Russia when it comes to gaining support, maybe specifically in the former GDR, but also in Germany in general?
That's a tough question, because I haven't really seen data on that. I mean, what I know, or what I think I've seen in survey data I looked at, is that there are some voters which might have moved to the AfD because of the issue. So have taking pro-Russian positions, being not in favor of helping Ukraine, is associated with voting AfD, is also associated with people now voting for the AfD who did not vote for the AfD in the national election of 2021. So it appears that the AfD at least could attract some voters based on this issue. And this might also be a segment that the Bündnis Sahra Wagenknecht could attract from former or people who now want to vote for the AfD. But I think it's also, I think, a difficult issue for in terms of what the elites of the party should do. I mean, I don't want to advise them, but there's also very strong support for helping Ukraine and the German public. The German public is also very much anti-Putin. And I think it could also hurt the party. I'm not sure. I haven't really seen any data on that, but I think it could also hurt the party, yes.
I wanted to get back to the electorate, or to our debate about class voting, for a second, because I was wondering about the role of the Social Democrats. Some voters, if the economic dimension is salient to them, we would expect them to vote for the Social Democrats right now. Do you see Olaf Scholz's SPD actually competing with BSW over this segment of voters? Or do you think they don't have much in common, because BSW is clearly an anti-establishment party and the SPD is very, very established?
Yeah, I think the latter perspective seems more promising to me, that they are not really competing over the same segments now, because of this division between one party that is basically, yeah, the party of the chancellor, and another party that is really anti-establishment. But in a way, it's not set in stone how anti-establishment and populist voters are. I mean, it appears to me that at the time we are recording this, there is a strong dissatisfaction with the way democracy is working in Germany, not only with the way the government is communicating, to say at least, but more of kind of this general impression that we are now at a stage where we are not in a very good economic situation. We also see that the established parties are not working in any way together. There should be some reforms which are not happening. So there is quite some dissatisfaction in the aggregate in the German electorate, I would say. And this is kind of a moving target as well, because this can change if the economic situation changes, if the traffic light coalition does a better job in terms of communicating, maybe also if we would see more cooperation between the Christian Democrats and the traffic light parties, which we basically need in terms of this consensus democracy system which we have in Germany. So in a way, yeah, there's kind of this competition, because what the mainstream left, the mainstream social democrats want to do is to also appeal to voters who are dissatisfied and to convince them that they don't need to be dissatisfied, that the situation is getting better and that the governing coalition is also doing a decent job.
Yeah, you talked about democratic dissatisfaction. And I mean, I don't know if it's your own research, but there is research out there that shows that, coming back to left authoritarian voters, that people in this quadrant of political competitions have some higher degree of democratic dissatisfaction and also are more likely not to turn out in elections, right?
Yes, we did some research on that, again, with my colleague Sven Hillen, where we looked at voter turnout of left authoritarians, where the idea is straightforward that because these parties have no clear party that matches their preferences, we should see lower electoral turnout among the segment. And this is exactly what we find if we look at Western Europe. Interestingly, we don't see this in Eastern Europe, where we have this left authoritarian parties. And we also see, yes, that left authoritarians tend to be less satisfied with the way democracy is working.
In a 2023 paper of yours, you talk about the trade-off for radical left parties, a trade-off between appealing to socio-cultural professionals with more libertarian policy stances, or more working-class voters, to left authoritarian voters with their authoritarian views. And I was wondering if this also applies to BSW, maybe in some sense.
Yeah, I would think that this applies to BSW. Actually, when we wrote that paper, we started with a quote from Sarah Wagenknecht, her saying that Die Linke is now only appealing to these urban groups of voters who are highly educated, who are only concerned with this cultural issue. And this is exactly the division in the radical left we had been interested in when writing this paper, where there is a debate within radical left parties, and it has been going on for quite some time in the German party Die Linke, whether the party should take a clearly libertarian profile, appealing to educated, urban, young voters, sociocultural professionals, or whether it should appeal to the segment of working class voters. And this is basically connected to taking a position on the cultural dimension that is either libertarian, appealing to these educated groups, or taking a position that is more conservative, more nativist, more authoritarian, and appeals to these production workers. And what we show in the paper, together with three great co-authors, is that it matters what these parties do, what position they take on the cultural dimension. So if they hold more authoritarian positions, they will receive more votes from working class voters, but they will receive less votes from sociocultural professionals. So there's really a libertarian versus authoritarian trade-off, and it's also a trade-off in terms of the social classes that a radical left party can attract. And we would expect the same then to apply to the basically division between the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht and Die Linke, where we should expect that the Linke now will receive even more votes from sociocultural professionals, and where the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht is more able to attract production workers, maybe also service workers, people with lower degrees of education. But we need some time to see whether this is actually what happens or not.
Do you think you'll write a follow-up paper, look into this question again in a year?
That's an interesting question. I mean, we thought that it might be interesting to revisit this question of electoral turnout. So what we did in our work together with Sven Hillen in terms of how left authoritarian positions matter for electoral turnout was we basically did a cross-sectional analysis of Western European countries. But then we also had a case study of Finland. We looked at the electoral breakthrough of the True Finns, which is a radical right party, but which at least at that time had rather left-wing positions on economic issues. And we wanted to see whether this mobilized left authoritarian voters. And we thought now that it might be an interesting idea to get back to this question, because the case of the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht is actually in a way a bit nicer than what we had in the past with regard to the True Finns, because the party is really new and it might really have a clear left authoritarian profile. But it's really up for us to see whether the party will indeed have this clear left authoritarian profile. But it's certainly a good idea to revisit some of these questions. How does the class composition of the BSW look like? Can it attract former non-voters with left authoritarian positions? Does it attract voters who previously voted for the AfD? What will be the profile of BSW voters in terms of attitudes? Are these really people who hold left authoritarian positions, or is this anti-establishment populist dimension which matters more? So lots of interesting stuff that people can work on, and I'm happy to see other people working on that, having done some work on left authoritarians in the past. But maybe I will also join that discussion together with Sven Hillen and other people and say something on that.
Yeah, I mean, surely we're going to get some papers this year on BSW. But I mean, it would also be funny if the party just doesn't come into parliament and just drops below the drops below the political existence. But maybe coming to an end. I know you're a quant guy and this is a research-based podcast, but if you had to give a prediction on where do you see BSW in a year, in terms of its vote share, in terms of its positional profile, in terms of its electorate, what would you say?
Whew, that's really the tough question. Not only because I'm not sure what the right answer is, but also because people can listen to my answer in 1 year and figure out in the many ways in which I was wrong. I think the party has a good chance in terms of just the timing of elections. So I expect it to perform reasonably well in the European Parliament elections, and that could help the party. And reasonably well, I mean, it could just be ending up with like 4 or even 5 percent of the vote, and it would just create some media reporting on that, and it could help the party with respect to the state elections that happen afterwards. And then the party could perform decently in the state elections, and that could again help the party with regard to the next German national election. So I guess the scheduling of things is quite good for the party. But there's so much that we need to see. We also need to see whether the party is really, in terms of the elites, whether it's really comprehensive, really speaks with one voice, has a consistent messaging. And so far, at least this part seems to work well. But I think a lot is also contingent on this kind of general dissatisfaction, which is relatively high now, and from which the party also profits. So the polling we see now, I think, also needs to be seen in light of the fact that the satisfaction with the current government is quite low, that democracy satisfaction is also quite low, that kind of this anti-establishment feeling is more widespread now than it has been in the past in Germany. And we could also expect this to change, and this could hurt the party going forward. So I think there to at least try to be a bit more precise, I think we could see the party ending up in the next German Bundestag. I think we could see that, but it's quite uncertain whether this will really happen, and there are many things that could come into play.
Okay, thank you for this outlook, Niels, and thank you for the conversation. Maybe we will revisit this in half a year.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
and then figure out all the ways in which I was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
This was the second episode of No Problem At All. If you're interested in Niels' work, we post a link to the papers we talked about in this episode in the show notes. You can also follow him on social media.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the podcast and rate it on Spotify or wherever you listen to this. We are also happy to receive feedback, so consider following us on Twitter via the links in the podcast description or send us an email. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Bye-bye.